Thank you. I thank the organizers for putting together this very exciting workshop, and it's a pleasure for me to be here. Okay, except that I had to miss the last week because of teaching responsibilities. Okay, so I'll talk about this, how to detect topological edge states, well, how to detect the Z2, more specifically Z2 order by direct imaging of the edge states. Okay, so let me start out acknowledging my students and collaborators, David, Shea, Dong, Andrew, Matthew. They're the graduate students here who are really carrying out the work on site. So and then we closely collaborate with Bob Kava's group and also other groups around the world on the materials aspect. And all my students apparently have some interesting Fermi surface associated with their career. And this is the bismuth selenide Fermi surface we just posted. Right, yeah. Right. Okay. So I should also acknowledge many helpful discussion with Charlie Kane, Xucheng Zhang, Duncan Holden, and also I'm learning about this theta vacuum from Frank Ulchik. He seems to be interested. He tells me that there's this dual between monopole and charge. Okay, so let me map this problem into the global framework of fundamental condensed matter physics. So I have taken the liberty to define what is fundamental condensed matter physics, quantum Hall effect, superconductivity, quantum magnetism, phase transitions. So the question that has emerged is that, can we get Hall-like effect without magnetic field? Can we get non-Abelian physics out of it? The superconductivity, can we get superconductivity without phonons or BCS? And magnetism, can we get fractionalization in higher dimension? And can we get deconfined criticality? Okay, so we are here. So this is sort of the overview of what I do at Princeton. I'm using a variety of techniques to address three of the problems I mentioned. One is this using angle and spin resolve photoemission spectroscopy, resonant X-ray scattering, and we started to do some neutron scattering. And we also do quite a bit of spectrometer development at places around the world, including SLAC and LBL. Okay, so this is the outline of my talk. I'll mention the basics of quantum Hall effect and topological invariance, and report observation of topological insulators or metals in a variety of compounds, starting with bismuth antimony alloy. And then I'll show antimony has Z2 topological surface states, and I'll mention a few others, although there is embargo from the journals. And then I'll describe how we experimentally determine the Berry phase, which is critical for topological surface states. I mean, that's the critical signature to get new nautical one. And then I'll address how much at this point can we manipulate these topological surface states. Okay, so this is a brief. This is our work published and posted on this topic. So as we all know that quantum Hall effect phase is a band insulator, but it has topological properties in the sense that there can be conduction through the boundary. And then the quantum numbers one can read off from a transport measurement. Okay, so let me remind you, the quantum number of the quantum Hall effect is a topological quantum number, and its property is that there is a close correspondence between bulk and edge through this Chern theorem. So this finite n this finite n giving me this this topological protection. Okay. Oops. Did I do something wrong there? Okay, just a second. Okay, so so that's quantum Hall effect, which is the state is time, not time reversal invariant, it breaks time reversal symmetry. So I guess the first person who asked this question, can we get Hall-like effect without magnetic field, is Haldane, and he solved this graphene lattice problem, and then he showed that if you have alternating field, but the net field is zero, you can have indeed have Hall conductivity plus minus one, and the edge spectrum is something like this. We have chiral fermions, so there is a so experimentally, suppose somehow this Haldane model is realized. How do one know that it's really from experiments? How do one really know that it is Haldane model? So I propose two things. First of all, one can do a transport measurement and see that the Hall conductivity is plus minus one experimentally. But having Hall conductivity plus minus one does not prove that this it's Haldane model. One really has to look at the microscopic, that what the electrons are doing, this edge structure. So direct imaging of the edge structure is critical. So one has to combine Hall transport with this direct imaging, because if the edge structure is like that, this will necessarily imply one can predict that there will be conductivity like that. So edge bulk correspondence. So I guess the next important development is that can we get a time reversal invariant state? And this was shown by Kane, Mealy, Barnevig, Zhang, and also numerically by other groups. And then in 3D, there is a non-trivial generalization. It was realized shortly afterwards. So this state can be the analogy with spin orbit coupling and the Hall physics, as quantum Hall physics. The analogy between these two comes from the form of the spin orbit coupling. One can write it in a symmetric form and then can show that it might correspond to a linear combination of two quantum Hall systems up and down. However, in this case, the Hall coefficient for up and down can cancels each other, so that the overall conductance is zero. So that means the charge number is zero. There's no protection for the edge states, right? So the non-trivial question here is that can there be a new protection law for the edge current? Is there a new topological state of matter? That's an equivalent question. And this one can ask in 2D and 3D. And there are many different generalizations into 3D. In its simplest form, these invariants are easily written down if the crystal has inversion symmetry. So one considers the parity of the block states and this at the time reversal invariant momenta. And then this index, if it is zero, then it's trivial. There's no protection for the edge current, edge state. And if it is one, it's non-trivial. And in 3D, there are four invariants, so there are 16 states and all that. So I'll focus on the experimental part from now on. Is that the topological quantum number of quantum Hall effect can be measured by transport by looking at these steps, and that's straightforward. How do I microscopically identify the topological quantum numbers associated with this Z2 topological phases? How to experimentally measure, nail down the topological quantum numbers quantitatively and uniquely? Okay? The challenge is nothing is necessarily quantized, but there is a set of four topological numbers. How do I measure these numbers? So I argue that to nail down these topological numbers invariants, one has to do a spin-sensitive momentum resolved measurement. And this I'll explain why. So we have to image the Dirac fermions directly. Now, that's not enough. We also have to look at their spin texture, whether there's a Berry phase on the surface or not. Ideally, one could step back and go down and ask this question, how about I just measure the parity of the bulk block states? Then I should be able to know what happens, right? But that's terribly difficult. But it turns out one can show uniquely that the parity of the bulk states, it's based on the theoretical formulation, it's actually uniquely identified by these two measurements, experimental measurements. So we do photoelectric effect measurement, photon in, electron out. There are conservation loss associated with the scattering process, energy, momentum, and spin. So we analyze energy, momentum, and spin. Spin detection is tricky. One might think that one should do a Stern-Gerlach experiment, but that's terribly inefficient. It turns out a more efficient process is to use Mott scattering. That's in itself is like extrinsic spin Hall effect. So we're using extrinsic spin Hall effect to measure spin degrees of freedom here. So we have a beam, electron beam coming out of the Sienta detector, and it's scattering from a gold nucleus. There is spin orbit coupling, LS, and then I can get this asymmetric, two channels. So on the left detector, I count what I call up, right detector, I count what I call down. So what are the candidate materials? Graphene spin orbit coupling is weak. We studied lead telluride system quite a bit, and there's no sign of surface state, although it has four Dirac fermions, so it's not surprising. So it's consistent that there's no surface state in lead telluride. Then there is, Bob is always scared about working with mercury or any toxic material, so we never, arsenide too, yeah, his. So we never had him make some of this stuff. But we were all working together on sodium cobaltate, so we wanted to look at the conventional thermoelectric materials like bismuth telluride, bismuth antimonide. Bismuth telluride, the problem is that bismuth telluride has surface states, but its surface reconstructs, and it also it interacts with the X-ray beam. It's time dependent, so it's ruled out. We looked at it about 1.5 years back. And then the only system that worked for us is this bismuth antimonide alloy. Okay, and last summer and spring, we also looked at new materials, because that, based on the lessons learned from bismuth antimony, we figured out what are other materials to look at. I suggested a list of materials to Bob Kalfa, my colleague, to make for us. And then we go back and forth, feedback both ways, how to improve the materials quality by looking at the ARPES data. And then we looked at this bismuth selenide, this 2-3 series, and there are four compounds in that series. Only bismuth selenide is clean. Antimony telluride is terrible because it has five surface states. It's dealing with this is even worse than bismuth antimony alloy.
Can you deduce whether it is topologically non-trivial or trivial class?
It has the surface reconstructions. It's, one has to do STM and ARPES together to rule out what is trivial surface state, what is surface reconstruction, and what is topological. It's a very lengthy.
The number of bands?
Yeah, well, I mean, so far it looks like it is topological. It's five. But it's... But your calculation should be one, right? On the surface state and the centimeter telluride are five.
For business, antimony 7-9 is trivial. Antimony telluride is not trivial.
Yeah, we are finding five, so that's not trivial. But I'm saying that it has odd number of states, but it's also surface reconstruction. That's something we don't want. So this is not good.
So do you know the details of the surface
disparity? I'll show some data. I thought I hooked up already. Okay, anyway. So, however, antimony, although it's a metal, it has non-trivial Z2 number. So we looked at antimony in extensive detail in connection to bismuth antimony. The advantage in antimony is it's pure metal. There's no alloying disorder, nothing. It's very clean, and it confirms that what we said about bismuth antimony is correct.
How about bismuth?
Bismuth is a more complicated, I'm coming here, next bismuth. So far, there is some, okay, I'll mention that later. So if we start putting antimony into bismuth, it turns out only 9% bismuth gives you an insulating state, and the gap is a Dirac gap, because the bands are very much Dirac-like, conical. And of course, because of the mass, this part is rounded. It's not in my schematic, but in reality, it's more rounded. So now it's known that there is no inversion from antimony to bismuth, but there is, Liu and Allen would say there is inversion between bismuth and bismuth antimony, right? Is that correct?
It's not just Liu and Allen. I mean, there's also experiments, I think, which look at how the bands move, and I think they get closer together first, and then they get further apart. So there's.
I see. So.
But those are cyclotron resonances.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's you can see that I haven't labeled whether there is an inversion transition or not, because the experimental data, at least my data, does not enlighten us on this, whether there is transition or not. But at least we know this side is non-trivial. So that's why we're focusing on that. This, it's difficult to sort out that side. So bismuth could be trivial or non-trivial. It's not experimentally settled. Okay, so now if we cleave the surface of bismuth antimony, I should also point out that this insulating state is realized only by 9%, so your main matrix is still long-range ordered bismuth. And this, although these are alloys, your back peaks are less than 0.01 degrees. So they are long-range ordered, high-quality crystals. So what is the alloying disorder? 9 out of 100 bismuth atom, it's a positional disorder. And it turns out it's extremely insignificant. And it does not destroy the translational invariance. One can see that this is a picture that it does not surface. It's translationally invariant. K is a good quantum number in this alloy. That's because it's only 9% antimony, and it's a site disorder. It's not positional. Okay, so bismuth has two pockets. One electron pocket at the L point, and hole pocket at the T point. So when I go from bismuth to antimony, then these pockets, they open up a gap. So I should see a gap at all these points. So if I consider the projection of this 3D Brian zone along the 111 axis, this is the projected surface Brian zone. Gamma bar, K bar, M bar are the high symmetry points. And only M bar is a time reversal invariant point. K bar is not, and gamma by default it's time reversal invariant. So if we look at the emission photoelectron intensity at the Fermi level, we see a nice k-space periodicity, and we see this star map, and then this streaks of light. And this is so strong. This is such a robust surface state, such a robust state that you can see that in within an hour. And that never happens with photo emission if you try to look at bulk states. And you can be lousy about preparing surface and still get this state data. It's very reproducible. So if I look at this bulk band structure, I project it onto the surface, I would expect one pocket at M, because L projects to M, and another pocket at gamma. Okay? Well, I mean, say somehow this sample is metallic or bad or whatever, it should go around. You only perturb around your mean field solution. That's what I'm saying. But that's not what is happening. There's no pocket, there's a star pattern. So that's very strange. So we want to isolate surface and bulk in a systematic way and in a thorough way. So what we do, we walk around, we track all the trajectories in the three-dimensional case space. And you can sit down with your photoelectric equation conservation laws and you can convince yourself that we can do that. This is standard. Actually, this is how people figured out the gallium arsenide band structure in the 80s. It's not new. It's a well-known technique. Okay, so if I take a cut through the L point, this yellow is my cut. So this is my cut through the L point, and I look. I lost the axis. It should be. There should be point here. This is electron volt. Okay. So and this is the momentum axis. So if I cut through L point, this is the L point, and then this is my scan, and I look at the deeper binding energy along this cut. So in the deeper binding energy states, I see these two bands, pair of bands, and then I see a bunch of stuff piled up there. So this is a basic LDA calculation. Actually, it works better if you have spin orbit than tight binding is simpler. It's actually tight binding with spin orbit. One can do this band calculation. It's consistent with Liu and Allen. So these are the bulk states, the solid bands. And these circle bands, they don't have correspondence with the data. I mean, the circle band is the one that cannot be traced from the experiment. So there is correspondence between bulk and our measurement, bulk calculation, except for this top band. Or maybe there is other stuff down there. Now, if I take a cut along this line, one can see it's a three-dimensional. There'll be enormous KZ dispersion of this compound. So one would see a radical change of the band structure going from here to here, the deeper lying states. So now the deeper lying states are completely different. This pair of states are there. And then one can see that we have correspondence in the experiment of the deeper lying states. Only the top state, there is no correspondence in the band calculation. So my first suspect would be that these states, they don't have any correspondence with the bulk. They're funny. So they might be surface states. Question? Yeah.
What is denoted by the blue? Because it seems like the blue was the one that was missing from the calculation on top, but then on the bottom it's one of your, maybe I'm wrong about blue. Is it purple?
Right. Oh, these are the bulk bands, the solid.
And on top, that's
also. It's also bulk band. So in this case, the surface and bulk are degenerate. Okay. But as an experimentalist, I want to find out my way of separating it without resorting to anybody's calculation. So this is how I do it. How to isolate bulk and surface states without using any band calculation. So what I do here is that, if I have electron waves in a three-dimensional box, they have a kz dependence, k square plus k y square plus kz square. For a two-dimensional electrons, there's no kz dependence. So if I change k sub z, the states would be unaffected, my signal would be unaffected, okay? So I'm changing the perpendicular momentum by changing the photon energy that one can relate through the photoelectric scattering process. And without having to model the step, because I'm only interested in the relative dispersion, not the absolute position of that KZ cut. Okay, so then what I see is that the states near the Fermi level, they do not change with photon energy, but the states below the Fermi level, for example, this peak, it has crazy dispersion. Right, it's dispersing with the, as I change photon energy, the state moves. So that means this state has three-dimensional dispersion. It cares about the fact that I'm changing k sub z, and this state is two-dimensional dispersion, and it doesn't care about k sub z. The experimental k sub z has changed. So the state near the Fermi level is something that we suspected that it's surface state because it has no correspondence with the bulk. Okay, so now I remove the surface states. That's what we do in when we study superconductors of correlated systems. And because I'm interested in the bulk band structure. Well, bulk band structure can be slightly modified in the surface, but there is correspondence, overall correspondence. If I do that, and then I do that all over the three-dimensional Brian zone, after doing a lot of taking a lot of data, I can model this band. And what we find is that the L band, it has this Dirac-like dispersion with a gap. Gap is about 50 millivolt. And that this nicely agrees with the bulk calculation by Fukuyama and Kubo back in the 60s, that L band in bismuth antimony, it's only 10% antimony, so it should not change that much. So now I only retain what is available right at the Fermi energy, Fermi level, chemical potential. If I do that, then I get this beautiful pattern, Fermi surface, and this, since it's right at the Fermi level and it has dispersion through the Fermi level, so it's gapless. I'll show more evidence that it's gapless. So what is it? And so now the challenge is this surface, Fermi surface, trivial or non-trivial?
What was the evidence that the bulk bands don't intersect within the energy?
Here. Let me. So this is how close it gets. I'll show more data along that line. So this is the Fermi energy zero. It's below. It's a gap. Wow. It's also known from optics. One can do optical conductivity and see it's a gap. It was done by Russians in the 80s, in the 60s, 70s, or 80s. Okay. But that does not mean that there is no impurity or other things. You can have other things pinning the Fermi level and stuff. And now that we have a detailed map of the three-dimensional band structure, I can use that internal detail to fine align the surface Fermi surface with the Brian zone, because our experimental precision alignment is not that great as we would love to. And this is often not done in high TC or other compounds because there people don't really go through those details. So in this case, we're lucky that we had to go through those details and we can fine align. So that gives us more confidence that we're in a position to think about its topological, its geometrical or topological behavior. Okay. So typically, now let's get back to everyday intuition that I get surface state when I have a bulk system, I have a 3D, I have a system, and then I impose a boundary condition. So then the states at the boundary, they are modified, but they should have some sort of memory of the bulk wave function. It's somewhat distorted or something will happen. So is there a way to connect that? So that is what I'm trying to ask here. if I take cuts on this Fermi surface and look down at lower higher binding energies, we can always see these linear bands. First time we saw this thing, we thought this system is like graphene, electron doped graphene, because you can you have some electron on this Dirac cone, but then we figured it's totally different. Now one can see that the fact that it has bulk linear-like bands, when you impose a boundary condition of some sort, the surface state, whatever you get, it's unusual. If you look at this just Fermi surface alone, but the band structure, it looks like it does. It is coming from the bulk band by imposing boundary condition because it's all linear, and the bulk bands are linear. Okay. Actually, when we did that experiment, we did not know about Z2 physics. We were doing that for in connection to thermoelectric compounds because this is thermoelectric, and we wanted to look at a conventional. So then we found this. And we were frustrated because we cannot get rid of the surface state no matter what we do that. So then we found that there are a strange type of surface state that you really cannot get rid of. I had a fight with some LDA band theorists that the cobalt at work, so I really extensively studied what goes on with the surface. Okay, so then we learned that there are certain insulators, band insulator, this stuff is band insulator, where you can form surface states that are that threads the gap, that are connected, that they connect the conduction and bulk and the valence and conduction band, but most surface states do not do that, and actually one can look up in the literature, most surface states are like that. You can find multiple crossings. So it's like typical in-gap state when you put some impurity or other stuff in the in a semiconductor insulator. So there's an even number of crossing, there's odd number of crossing, and but you have to look at the specific momenta, this time reversal invariant momenta. So then if we do the same analysis, in our case, it's gamma and m, the time reversal invariant momenta of the system, and we count how many states are there, down there, and we see there are 5 states. And how do I know that this is, because the theory requires time reversal invariance, I haven't proved that this is holding, so at least I know that at the Kramer's point, the states are degenerate, and there is a Dirac point there. It's degenerate with the bulk, that's why imaging both at the same time is difficult for us, but you can see that if you extrapolate, this is another Kramer's point. So at least despite disorder and other things, the Kramer's point is not broken. So that's very exciting that the Kramer's point is intact. And later I will show how to break the Kramer's point, and you'll see there's a gap opening. We did actually that on bismuth selenide, not on this compound. Okay, and of course there is correspondence between this band structure and the Fermi surface I showed previously. It's detailed in the supplementary information of our paper, and one can see that if I look, this intensity is always low compared to this part. If I look near here, it's kind of distorted. And not only that, it's not a sharp Fermi surface like this one. And this is, and then there is a lot of intensity out there. And this intensity is K independent. No matter what K you are, this intensity is there. In other words, the Fermi contrast is low. And that is the signature of disorder. There are always states, finite density of state at the Fermi level. And that's why it should be black, it should be like that. And this plot is different. This is, I'm not plotting the EDCs, I'm plotting the second derivative to track the line of the peaks that track. The real data is like that. So there's alloying disorder there. Okay. So let me So then this is, we just find odd number of states between two Kramers point, and we need more evidence that, well, although in theory, Z2 theory, that should be enough. If we can prove that the states are singly degenerate, if they're doubly degenerate, then the 5 would double into 10, and then there is no Berry phase. How do I prove that the states are single degenerate, and there is a Berry phase on the surface? So that's a critical step. Okay. To do that, we have to do a spin resolve measurement and see whether the states are degenerate or not. So this is some raw data, very raw data, on a compound that's not ideal. Later on, I'll show better compound. This is, I'm just showing it for historical reason. This is where we first realized it's single degenerate. So these are my surface states, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm using Mott polarimetry, extrinsic spin Hall effect, to isolate the spin degrees of freedom. So what I do, I take a cut, say at 25 millivolts, where I have large intensity along Kx, and okay, so let me first focus on this one. I'll get to that. So if I separate the spins through the Mott detector, then I see that this band, it ends up in the right channel in my detector, which I call up arbitrarily. And then this guy, this ends up, this in the blue curve, it ends up in the down channel in the left detector. So this point and this point, they're in two different separate detectors. So K plus and K minus spin maps into, K plus spin up maps into K minus spin down. So this is another proof that despite alloying disorder, time reversal symmetry is there. Okay, so then what I do, I look at the spin of this channel, this crossing. This ends up in the left channel, down. And this one, this is signal is weak, but you can see that compared to the red curve, there is something there. This is also in the same channel. So this is spin down, this is spin down. Okay, this is a better set of curves. One, crossing one, this is one, is blue. Two is red. And then two and three have same polarization. It ends up in the same detector. So what does that imply?
Sorry, I have a problem with this, assigning the spin. You know, see, the difference is tiny compared to the total.
Right.
So it looks like maybe 5% more.
Yeah, but here here that's in this set of curves. Here it's not. Its difference is large. These are also raw data. Here the difference is large. If you take the difference between blue and red, yeah, it does not fall onto each other.
It looks like 10%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it also has the. It's not. It's.
So why there's so much mixing?
Oh, this also has to do with the detector background and inefficiency. It's not theoretical thing. These are the right.
Right. So the surface state I mentioned K, let's say, is not a spin eigenstate.
Yeah.
So no, that is a separate issue. In a spin orbit coupled system, spin is not a quantum number. I mean, it's not a valid quantum number. So you don't, even on the theoretical ground, you don't expect. So that is, I haven't calculated that.
5%
can be calculated.
Yeah.
So the momentum can be calculated.
Yeah.
Borderline. I mean, it's not much smaller than one.
Yeah. Okay. Therefore,
one is 100%.
But this is Mott scaling, right? So even if it's 100% polarized,
you know. Yeah, this is the Sharman function is
because of the Mott.
It's Mott scattering. It's not.
Okay.
That's what I meant by you already have a background to start with. Yeah, yeah. There should be nothing there, but there is a lot of intensity there.
How selective can your detector be?
Huh?
How selective can your detector be? How much more do you get along the other cubic polarized?
So I'll show that in an antimony where the system is cleaner. Okay. So Now I can start assigning that one is down, two is up, and then three is up, and there are other stuff, right? So one might guess that since two and three are up, they should connect above the Fermi level. In other words, right away I know that two and three are trivial states. They're not they don't carry a topological quantum number. And there's a simple way to check that, that the spin assignment is correct. All you do, dope the surface. If you put electrons on the surface, Fermi level rises, and you do see that they connect up. So I know right away, out of the five surface states, I got rid of the two. I'm left with three.
Only went out to the surface?
Well, I mean, it will go a little bit in the, it's not just monolayer.
How can you do it?
Just deposit thermal evaporation.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I'll show more of that stuff. Well, I'm promising a lot of things. I hope I have time. Okay, so now I got rid of, out of five, I'm down to three. And I also know the spin information. And the rest I rely on is very basic fundamental physics, that Kramer's theorem is right, and bands do not stop in the middle of the gap or something. So I have only two possibilities, that spin up this state one. One possibility is that this band goes up and hits the conduction band. The other possibility, it goes up and it has to hit somewhere. And it must, as I showed, that it has time reversal invariance, it must meet at M with other, because it has to be degenerate there. And as I showed, that just by putting doping the surface, you can get rid of the two states because they're trivial. So I'm left with these two options. And another option is just put more dopant on the surface and see how much can you go. There is a technical difficulty is that if you dope too much, then your photo emission signal goes down. You cannot see much because you have buried the surface too much. So there is a limit to that. But however, these three surface states, actually, they are since, so one can see that this is a, this one possibility is just straight up. That's like bismuth selenite. So it's topological right away, spin polarized. And this bismuth antimony is actually, it realizes more what Kane had predicted, this partner switching behavior. So partner switching has this zigzag pattern, but there's nothing religious except for the Kramer's theorem. There's nothing religious what should happen in between. So what is happening in bismuth selenide is that this guy goes up, and then it does this, and then it goes up. So it's actually one state. So the bismuth antimony has one band that carries the topological index. There is further check. Now, okay, and this is the beauty about the difference between geometry and topology, that topology only cares about connectivity, geometry doesn't. So these are topologically equivalent. So that means bismuth's antimony realizes a partner switching surface state, whereas bismuth selenide doesn't do that. Now, I want to check this scenario without, now I want to totally get rid of the alloying disorder. Okay. It's straightforward to calculate the band structure and prove that there is no inversion between insulator and the semi-metal. And semi-metal, pure antimony carries the Z2 number, it's just parity, even my students can do that. Okay, so now if I look at pure antimony, no disorder, then this is the structure, surface structure. This is where the bulk band has, valence band heads up. So there is intensity there, it's degenerate with even if there is surface state. And this is, again, this is also partly degenerate with the bulk state. Antimony is a semi-metal. There should be electron hole population at the Fermi level for the bulk compound. Only pure surface state in antimony is the central Fermi surface. So the And again, we did all those KZ and all sorts of things to confirm that. The topological surface state, again, what it looks like Kane's picture, that there's only one. However, so this is the schematic picture, what is happening. So this stuff you see is related to that, and this stuff is related to that. So these are bulk states. So the surface structure is that the Kramer's point is down here. So there is, unless we can raise the chemical potential up here somehow, we cannot make it, even if we raise there, the states are there. There is no way to introduce a gap. No way to have a single pure surface state and insulator. So antimony, although it is like this, but it does not, band structure does not allow you to realize that state. Now I want to look at the spin polarization on the surface. And okay, so this is just a more cartoon that these states, even if they're surface-like, they're resonant because they degenerate with the bulk. And what happens in antimony is that from Kramer's point, it connects up here. So it's like bismuth selenide, except that it's a semi-metal.
Is the spin assignment known from the band structure calculations?
Spins, you mean the...
Which one is up and which one is down is known from the band structure.
Right, yeah. Okay.
That was just a type binding calculation. Using the.
Oh, this is Kane's calculation. I mean, Teo, Fu, and Kane.
So it's just a... There's nothing sophisticated. It's just using the type binding model.
Polarization axis is always seems. Polarization axis is always seems.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm trying to show here. So the nice thing about antimony is that the states at higher momenta, they don't matter to determine their Z2 number because they're degenerate with bulk anyway, so they're they're irrelevant. So near gamma point, spins are in a spin-orbit coupling system. The spins are better. It retains more polarization than away from the K at a high momentum. So here we are lucky. We do a scan, spin resolve scan. So this addresses your question that now one can see that it's much nicer. Polarization curves are much nicer. So, we look at 30 millivolt because at Fermi level, its intensity starts to drop. But assuming that, it confirms, but looking at here, nothing has happened to the band, so we are safe. So I can take these cuts on this central Fermi surface along different lines and look at the relative polarization of the spins in my spin detector. So up, down. If I take a cut, it's up, down, like that. So that means it rotates like that. There's a left-handed rotation. And from that, since the other part of the spin orbit split band, it's degenerate with the bulk, and it does not enclose any trim, it's irrelevant. I'm left with a single spin polarized Fermi surface where the spin rotates. So there is straightforward, I can now get the angle. It's close to pi, so there's a pi Berry's phase on the antimony. Okay, now I'm going to summarize the surface structure using cartoons on bismuth antimony and antimony. In pure antimony, straightforward. Kramer's point is there. And bismuth antimony, if you dope the surface, then you are also single band. The spin down band goes there, and then it goes through a partner switching, just like this picture. Although, there's nothing religious that it has to go like straight. It does not violate any, it's topologically equivalent. One nice thing about the surfaces is that they have this mirror Chern number or something.
The bulk has the mirror
Chern number, which is reflected on the surface, that the spins rotate in a certain direction. Okay, so So these are, it's a very complicated story, and we have been spending a lot of time and energy to really sort out those details. At the same time, I involved two of my students, not David, who worked on the Bismarck antimony, Matthew and Dong, to work with Kava to find a new set of materials where possibly we can get have a simpler picture, more like what Kane has drawn for in his news article for our paper. Like, can we get something like this? And it turns out we can. And it shows up in bismuth selenite. So in bismuth selenite, nice thing is this is down, this is up, so there's a large gap. So it's like that. And if we do the experiment, we can see the Kremers point intact. And the challenge is that it has vacancies, so the Fermi level is up. But it is nice from the point of view that all the Fermi level is up, this is for the first time we're imaging the entire surface state of the undoped compound spontaneously. It came for free.
So is it an indirect gap semiconductor?
It's direct. Direct gap.
So
no, it's not correct. This schematic is not.
Is it intrinsic or is it?
It's whole. We believe it's vacancy. Yeah.
So in different samples,
Yeah. So that's the nice thing. If we use samples from one batch to another, the Fermi level moves up and down.
They are all electron doped.
Yeah, they're all electron doped.
And how much free concentration?
It's actually low. It's in my preprint. Somehow it's not in my talk, so I drew it here. The surface, Fermi surface, is a tiny one. It's like 5% of the Brian zone. So this is another advantage. That.
But what about the bulk? I think he's asking about the bulk. Though.
Oh, you mean the bulk? You mean the bulk? No, we haven't.
It's
around 10 to the 18.
Very, very simple.
Okay. It's around 10 to the 18 as sample dependent. Okay, so we have this picture. It's the Kremers point, which is, if I look close, it should look like Dirac point. And since I'm hitting part of the bottom of the conduction band, I also have resonant state. And that resonant state is sample dependent. Okay, so then we tried to do what Xu Chang has suggested me to do. Well, not on this compound, he suggested me to do that on bismuth antimony, but I realized this could be more interesting. So put a layer of magnetic atom on the insulator and see what happens. So when we did that, deposit a monolayer of iron, two things happen. One is that those
control to the level that it's a monolayer.
It's sub monolayer. No, we do not control to the level of monolayer.
We just count the atoms.
Yeah. Actually, it's even more simple. We just count the dose.
Uh-huh.
It's more primitive. Okay. So one can see that there's a very nice protected Kremers point there. And then when I put iron on the system, then I see two things. One, actually, it's better from the raw data that it became parabolic, and then it opened a gap. And that's one thing. Huh?
How large is the gap? Always is about.
It's hard to. I mean, it's 0.1 or so. And then the second thing that happens, which we cannot control, is that it also dopes the system. So the Fermi level is rise. So now what has happened in this picture, although it's not insulator anymore, so I have valence band, I have, so this answers your question that my schematic was wrong, because you can see from the raw data, it's a direct gap, not indirect gap.
Direct surface gap.
No, no, this is bulk. I'm imaging both surface and bulk. So the surface part is tangential to the bulk. So that's what I'm trying to draw here. So when it's without, when the Kremers point is protected, it looks like this. So when this is, when we put iron, it looks like that. It opens a gap. But the nice thing here, iron, well, in a sense, it's also it's donating electrons. Yeah, and what is happening is that it's donating a lot of electrons. That's something we cannot control. But it's from theoretical or conceptual point of view, for the first time, I mean, many of us have seen this thing in the theory literature. For the first time, we're imaging that. That's the interesting thing to me.
Principal group also did a magnetic field experiment.
Yeah, but not the direct imaging of the band structure.
So when you talk iron on it, it's paramagnetic?
We haven't characterized all those details.
But this is with the internal magnetic field.
We just put some deposit some iron on the surface. Without external magnetic field. Yeah.
So you don't know whether your iron monolayer is magnetic or not.
At least locally there should be some field. But the breaking, I think breaking has two contributions. One is from disorder. Because strong disorder will also break the Kremers point. There is no protection from strong disorder.
Strong? No amount of invariant disorder.
But then the strong disorder will change the system Hamiltonian locally.
No,
that's what I mean on the bulk. I mean, it's putting additional atoms, it will deform the surface and introduce a potential. So I think experimental point of view, strong disorder will break the Kremers point. Actually, to test this idea, now my students are doing, they are now depositing, instead of iron, they're depositing non-magnetic atoms, they're depositing gold. And see what is the contribution of strong disorder and what is contribution of magnetism.
Is this data is also spin disorder?
We haven't done that yet, but my students also have done the band calculation, but in the calculation it comes out.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for us to, yeah.
Have you tried other magnitudes?
No, this is too early. I mean, this is very recent development. Okay, so then we looked at another compound, this antimony telluride, and it does not have this nice Dirac structure. It has multiple very complex surface structure. And this is the image. This ghost is actually a domain. It's not a real thing. And it's very difficult to get rid of the domain in this compound. Okay, so as I suggested, however, even that compound can be doped, electron and hole doped. One can see that when I electron dope, the electron Fermi surface increases and the hole Fermi surface decreases.
Just doping
and
the surface, right?
Just doping the surface, keeping the bulk insulating. When I hole dope the system, then hole Fermi surfaces increase. So it's not gating, but I have some control of the surface.
So this is bismuth.
This is no. Well, I mixed up. This is bismuth antimony.
But this is back to bismuth antimony again.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So far, materials condition-wise, bismuth antimony alloy is the best topological insulator we have, and I reached my conclusion. So I showed a series of materials that has non-trivial Z2 number by direct imaging of the states and measuring the periphase on the surface. And some have this partner switching behavior, others have single surface state. And future directions include what Xu Chang has suggested us to do, what this deposit a try to look for this charge monopole duality. And actually, it was also independently suggested by Frank Wilczek. This is probably more difficult. This look at superconducting proximity effect, but we need a different technique to do that, not ARPES. We can look at the interface electronic structure by doing resonant excess scattering. That goes back to my PhD thesis, so I'll have the chance to revisit what I was doing before. And it involved a lot of new instrumentation development. Thank you.
With the new instruments, do you hope to be able to get close to 100% selectivity between the two spins?
We actually need an array of mod detector if I can ever get this funding. We need an array of mod detector to do a vector spin imaging. Yes, I'll figure out everything on the spin of topological insulator if I have an array of mod detector, multi-channel, yeah.
Getting back to bismuth, is bismuth expected to be canonically trivial or not?
So far, band structure says trivial, but I have some confidential results that bismuth may be topological. No. The reason is different. Reason is.
Only the confidential.
The reason is. Let me. I can go back and show you why it doesn't break any. It's not a strong departure from Llewellyn or Kane theory. It's a very minor fix, which could be understood intuitively. Let me go there. And that's why I did not write anything there. This is because it can happen that, say, here it's like, I mean, this is the antimony side. And I'm sorry, antimony would be, it's below the Fermi level. I mean, it's semi-metal, right? But it can happen that the bands come, they come close, but they don't invert. So that non-trivial parity is maintained all the way to the bismuth side. So earlier experiment like Dresselhaus and others worked on it. They did not have the resolution to see whether, if your band come close to 1 millivolt, you may not see that. So that's the thing. But to me, what is more important is that getting this pi baryphase on the surface is a more, it's highly restrictive. It involves so many factors to be true. So that we haven't done on bismuth yet.
The pi baryphase is going to be there no matter what, if you're looking at the Fermi surface around gamma. The question of whether the bands invert, that's a question of what's happening.
That we also have to rule out that the resonant states do not contribute to the spin rotation, even in bismuth Fermi surface.
Yeah. But I mean, all the action is going on at the M point.
Right.
So I think that there's no reason to expect that anything's going to be different about pure bismuth antimony if you're looking around the gamma form.
Yeah. So you always see this like a rush by surface phase.
Okay.
Bismuth antimony and bismuth. Yeah. So the key question is experimentally do you see some qualitative difference compared to pure bismuth and pure antimony at M point?
At M point.
Yeah.
M point. It's the difficulty is that. Endpoint is degenerate with the surface. We cannot separate those things very well. That's what I showed. That is what I was trying to get to, that if they're degenerate with bulk, we don't have much control. What can we do? They're mixed. My trick doesn't work.
No, but you can see which one of the two it touches, right?
This requires very fine tuning where this inversion takes place. That it's like a in the X phase diagram, it happens that there's a critical concentration. And how do I know that my, say, I suppose it's at 4%, that's where it is currently believed, 4 or 7%?
4%.
4%. And it's extremely difficult to fine-tune the bulk material to that composition, even more difficult for us because when you cleave, we're not necessarily at 4%. So this is extremely challenging from an experimental point of view, that how do I get that fine-tuned direct point in bismuth antimony? We, of course, tried that, but we always either on this side or that side, and then it's mixed with bulk and surface, and we're lost.
Came to experiment antimony selenide.
Antimony selenide, it does not have surface states.
Okay.
Well, this series, as I showed, that we're just beginning to do these things. I mean, it takes enormous. It took us 2 years to do bismuth antimony. So antimony selenide, so far, we know that it doesn't have it.
It is trivial.
It is probably trivial, but I would not bet on it at this point. That's why I did not show the data. But we know that this antimony, this one has 5 surface states, that we know. But if we do the same band calculation, the slab calculation, it will give us 1.
So do you know these 5 are all surface states? Or
they're all surface states. They're not degenerate with the bulk. That's why we're confident it's 5 surface states. But if you do this same calculation, you'll get 1. Why are we getting 5 there?
Wait, what's going into the calculation?
Oh, it's just the slab calculation. Xuchang.
Not doing any. So there's no guarantee that a slab calculation. That
yeah, of course.
The surface
of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Get anything other than the number of bands mod 2, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So that's why I did not compare anything with any calculation. I just did the experiments independent of theory.
So can you, or maybe found later on, tell us a bit more about transport?
Transport, I don't do transport measurements.
I haven't settled on the talk yet, but the transport results are not ready for prime time. So, but I was going to talk about graphene.
So how, is this thing really a bulking solution?
Okay. All right. So,
like trivial questions like that.
No, it's an interesting question. So it's been known since the 60s. The resistivity, let's say at 10%, right smack where Sahib asked you to start, is insulating like, but then it always saturates at 4 Kelvin.
Yeah.
And the traditional belief was that this was impurity bands.
Right.
But in conversation with Charlie about 2 years ago, we started to suspect that it's actually surface states conducting. So what we've done is to reduce the cross-section systematically.
Yeah.
And you find a very interesting result. As the cross-section is reduced, this insulating trend gets weaker and weaker.
Cross-section?
So are we done with Zahid?
Yeah, I'm done.
So that's typically what the resistivity looks like in bulk bismuth antimony at 10%. And the value here is somewhat high if you want to attribute that to a single quantum of conductance. But if you now
conductive.
It's much more conducting, right?
Now, if you keep reducing the crystal dimensions, so what we have done to date is gone from, let's say, the width going from a millimeter to about 10 microns. And this can be extended, but we don't have results below 10 microns. So the motivation, of course, is that, you know, as you get a smaller cross-section, the surface should start to be dominant, right? So that's the basic idea. And indeed, the trend is quite promising, you know. So this is basically what you see.
That the resistivity or resistance?
Right, so I'm plotting resistance at this stage. Right.
Plotting?
Resistance. Yeah.
If you only change the width, then...
I'm drawing this from memory, right? So now the basic idea then is resistance is the wrong thing to plot. You should plot conductance, right? Because naively, the conductance should be the sum of the bulk and a surface conduction, right? So is the observed conductance due to the bulk plus the surface term. And the if you invert this to get the conductance, you get something like this. And now we let the experiment tell us how much surface do you want to count? Do you count the perimeter, all four surfaces, or do you just count the top crystalline surface? Right, because these things cleave very nicely, unlike pure bismuth. So you can get some control over the crystallinity. And it turns out that if you count the perimeter, right, so the perimeter is W plus thickness times 2, then we find that actually you do get a universal value. So expressed, in addition, you need to express the final saturation value as a sheet conductance. So when you do that, you get a universal value. And right now, we are trying to do it for various concentrations, sort of bracketing what Zahid had.
Changing X,
yeah. And this raises all kinds of interesting directions, but they haven't been explored. So, for example, if you're confident that when you're down to 10 microns, it's all surface, will you see a quantum Hall effect, 2D quantum Hall effect? But unfortunately, the mean free path is too short to see that yet, and we haven't gone down low enough in temperature. So then the other question is, what about the magnitude, right? So the magnitude now, if I take the... So this is the surface conduction expressed per unit square. This comes out to be something like 10 to the 4 in units of quantum conductance. And that, you know, at first that looks astonishingly high, but then that is like the Chauvin resistance problem. You know, when you're trying to support two-dimensional states, how many modes, right, if your sample has, let's say, a perimeter P, how many modes can you support? And we thought that the answer should be the ratio of the perimeter to the Fermi wavelength.
But it depends. It's either going to be that or it's going to be the mean free path.
Right. So
probably going to be KFL.
Yeah. So yeah, that's right. So for the ballistic regime, it's this. But for the, you know, these are very large samples, about 200 microns in length. You probably need to take in the mean free path. Yeah.
So if you do the same measurement for the sample which is not in the insulating region, then you should see it's 3D
type. Oh, I mean for less than 9%.
But the surface may still be a better conductor than the bulk.
But bulk has much more weight. I mean.
Well, it depends how. Obviously, if you make it big, then the bulk is always going to win.
Yeah.
But the surface is probably a much better metal than the bulk is.
The 3D density state is very low.
Yeah. That can be done, but we haven't tried it yet. Because you can play the same trick that one plays with graphene. These things can cleave, but not to a single monolayer. We think something like 100 layers. But we don't really know, so we haven't tried to get it yet.
So in our test, do you see odd number of fuzzies only?
Yeah.
only on certain materials.
Odd, right?
No, bismuth is even, but maybe I was not very clear about it. What I meant here, whether it may not be going through a transition, is that I do not have resolution to see whether the gap, how things are closing, right? All I meant that there may be a tiny gap, and then I may be off the right concentration. But bismuth has four surface states, not five. So that, I mean, that is a separate issue. But what I meant is that I want to find a bulk connection of this thing, that the bulk is different from antimony.
So, Fong, have you tried things like transport on bismuth selenide?
Yeah.
But there, is that number smaller?
No, we haven't done this yet. There, the dolting from vacancies.
The
bulk is probably not as good as it's aware.
Yeah.
So we want the material to be dirty.
Well, we'll try to tune.
We want
to look on dope.
Yeah. Ideally,
and compensate.
If you cannot achieve that, make it dirty.
Well, from Zahid's experiment, it looks like, if we get cover to put in dolphins, you can suck out all the bulk.
Yeah, I mean, the gap is so big, it might not be as hard. I mean, the narrow gap things are hard to compensate. But the gap is...
It's very large. It's 0.35 dB. It's actually larger than LDA calculation.
Okay, well, let's thank you.